On this week's 51%, they were a match on Tinder and for a kidney. The director thought it was good documentary material.
It just happens to be like a great women-owned company making a great story about great, amazing women.
And we hear about finding transgender health services. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
You are the reason why I smile. You are a beautiful surprise.
The documentary Bean tells the story of two young women who were a match on Tinder. One suffers from lupus and was in kidney failure, the other healthy and, as it turned out after about a month of dating, a perfect kidney match. Lori Interlicchio surprised Alana Duran with the announcement of the kidney match and caught her reaction on video, which went viral. The transplant surgery took place at Stony Brook University Hospital in New York in February 2016. Now, both 27-year-old Duran and 24-year-old Interlicchio aim to provide information and education about what it means to become a donor. The video of the gift of It's a Match caught the attention of Emily Bunnell. I asked what prompted her directorial debut with Bean.
I made this because I saw the video that Lori had posted online of her and Alana, and I was just really taken with it. Like, the chance of them being a donor match was so slim. So to find out that you were, and then to go to great lengths to do it as a surprise, and how genuine Alana's reaction was just really overwhelming to me in like a very positive way. And then I introduced myself to them and we spoke, and I learned a lot more of Alana's history and how complex her medical background was. And it just really motivated me to want to be able to tell this and to find people who are so well spoken and so well representative of this topic. I don't know, I just think like more people could be like Lori, and Alana's so wonderful too. So it just felt like if you're going to make a movie about this thing that's really inspiring and important, these were the people to do it with. And it's nice to work on something that you like believe in. And I cried watching the video. So it felt like that was a good enough reason to make that as a start.
What did you want people to walk away with though?
I want them to walk away knowing that this process isn't as scary as you think it is. I walked into it not really totally understanding how intensive or not intensive the surgery is, and seeing somebody like Lori, who a few days later was able to walk down a hallway, who's able to kind of lead an active life now, is motivation to me to do a little more. I mean, I was already a deceased donor register, but I just want people to think about it. You know, there's so much that you can do, whether it's just donating blood, which can make a huge impact, especially right now, or a larger thing. But if you just kind of think outside of yourself, I just hope that the movie inspires people to just think a little bit more and take those steps. It's really easy. Just go to your DMV and sign up. Go to your iPhone. Yeah, you can just sign up on your iPhone and do it. There's a lot of myths about organ donation that just aren't accurate. So I hope this like kind of debunks it and just inspires people to think about it and see if it's the right step for them.
So Lori, she said why, I'll just go down the line, I'm not picking
yeah.
a favorite. She said why she wanted to make the film. It's one thing to say I want to do this, but it's another thing to be part of this project. It's deeply personal, both your relationship as well as the process, which is enormous. So was there any hesitation on your part of having her film this?
I have never been camera shy. I've never been one to shy away from attention. So I immediately kind of thought like, yeah, we're doing this anyway. This kind of sounds fun. Like, have someone, you know, document our story while we're doing it. I think that I was primarily concerned with whether or not my family would want that level of intrusion in our home and our conversations with one another, and I knew that this was already something that they were very scared about, so to now have like more people added to the equation watching them be scared kind of worried me. So after talking to Alana and talking to, well, you know, Alana was there with me, but after talking to my parents about it, they were open to kind of seeing how it goes after meeting them one time, and they were great. They actually really, really helped it.
Just put me in the time frame of when you two met. I know how you met. from that point until you decide, you know, gonna make this happen. I mean, how long were you in a relationship?
So I guess it was our third or fourth date when I decided I wanted to get tested. I was probably about a month when I decided I wanted to get tested. And I don't think that it was necessarily like I was head over heels in love with Alana. It was just like I'd never really thought about the idea that I could do this for a person before. And I remember having to tell my parents that too to get them to understand that, like, if this was one of the girls on my cheerleading team, like, I'd want to get tested or, like, you know. And when I went to the doctor's appointment, I told them, like, even if I'm not a match, I still want some more information about this to just see if, like, I could do this for someone else, because it just seems like this not crazy thing to do that could help someone a lot. So, you know, I just went in with an open mind and wanted to get more information, and then I found out I was a match, and I didn't tell her right away. I wanted to make sure that all the tests came back that I could do it after she told me her story about not being able to receive the first kidney that she was supposed to get. I really didn't want to make her go through that again and find out she was a match and then not be able to take a kidney. So I wanted to make sure that everything was all in place, and I was definitely good to tell her. And then I think I told her in November, and then the surgery happened that February.
And where were you on this in terms of the film, you know, it being filmed?
Lori and I talked about it, and I just thought it would be fun and cool to do. I didn't realize how in-depth it was going to be. So when they're like, oh, we're going to be in the OR, and, like, you know, Stony Brook gave us permission to, you know, film footage in there. I was like, oh, wow, okay, this is, like, really, like, how is all going to be in this, you know. So I thought it was really cool, and, you know, I was for it. I also thought it'd be nice just to see, I don't know, like, later in life. I know it's, like, not that much later in life now, but, like, later in life to actually look back at it and, like, actually look back on it. I'm like, oh, this is what I said. This is how I reacted. Like, I don't think I'll ever forget how I reacted. I don't know. It's just something nice to see, like, later on. And also just, like, put that awareness out there as well. Because really this was intended to, like, be on TV and MTV. So, you know, it'd be like a lot of people our age or younger who would, you know, get that information, like, hey, we need more people to donate organs, like living donors or sign up for deceased donors and stuff like that.
So then where are you now in terms of relationship and in terms of feeling with, you know, it's a little bit of distance. It's not 10 years distance, mm-hmm. but it's some distance from the process, both film and both medically.
Mm-hmm.
And so on both fronts, how are you looking back at this and how are you thinking this all turned out?
Medically, I guess now I'm just thinking, like, wow, so much has changed and, like, I don't have to do dialysis anymore. And, like, my heart function has improved, like, dramatically. So, like, that's great. And then, like, with our relationship-wise, like, we've only been, like, what, stronger and, like, I don't know.
We just moved in together.
Yeah, we moved in together just this summer. I actually made the move from New York to Michigan to be with Lori because I'm like, I'm not going to do the long-distance thing anymore because, like, I just missed her too much and I didn't want to go that long without seeing her. I know in the film I said, like, oh, 4 days was, like, the max. And then she goes to law school in Michigan. I'm like, man, now it's months, and, you know, I haven't seen her. So definitely we're a lot closer. And it's just nice to, like, watch the film together. I'm like, oh, we said that together. Or, like, oh, we did this. Or, you know, like, the cute stuff that happens in the film. But, yeah, we're together forever. Forever, I don't know.
Where are you on this film in terms of gender? Like, where does gender, if at all, play a role? Either as a filmmaker, mm-hmm. as subjects, as a relationship?
I think when we set out to make it, we didn't even really think about it. You know, it never crossed my mind that it was a thing, that it was two women. It was just a good story. And then inadvertently, we kind of hired a lot of women. I think I work for a women's owned company. So our executive producers are women, our editors are women.
What company?
Gigantic Productions. So we kind of always tend to work with women, not all the way. We have men on our crew too. But we just kind of lean on women producers that we know and that we love to work with. And so I think it kind of inadvertently ended up being a movie about women, largely supported by women, which is kind of great when you step away. You know, when you're in the throes of the movie, you're just thinking about the story and you're worrying about the kidney and not getting them sick while we're filming and will the kidney take? You get really wrapped up in the emotion of it. And then, you know, for a couple months, you're cutting the film and then you're worried about how are they going to feel about how they're being represented. So it's only now that we really step back and we're submitting to festivals and doing the circuit that we realize, like, this really is a cool, like, women's movie. It's not like I don't think it beats you over the head with any kind of agenda in any sorts, but it just happens to be like a great women-owned company making a great story about great, amazing women.
Lori, so what about you in terms of, is there a gender focus on this movie? Should there be or shouldn't there be?
I mean, I definitely love that we have this great movie about two strong women, and I think that maybe in filming I was definitely conscious of wanting to be, I at the time I was coaching a team of 32 middle school girls, and I wanted to make sure that, like, you know, if they're ever watching this one day, like, I want to make sure that I can be someone that they can, like, see as a yeah, like, as a role model, I guess. And so I wanted to make sure that we were, like, representing ourselves positively for that reason. I do think that at the time maybe I wasn't super conscious of it, but I think that the fact that this company is women run, and again, there were men on our staff who were amazing as well, but, like, filming a very intimate documentary, you know, I can't say that men wouldn't have been able to do it that good, but I do think that maybe there was an element of comfort that we were able to achieve having so many, like, great, strong, feminine people on our staff. I remember particularly, like, right after surgery, one of the women who was working on the team, like, came over and was rubbing my head, and I was, like, super out of it and not feeling great and just, like, wanted ice chips, or my mom, and she was just, like, such a mother figure in that moment, and she just took care of us.
Now, what about you in terms of gender?
I think that at the time I didn't really realize what, you know, what it was all about. Like, I really didn't realize how many women were involved in this film. When you ask this question, I'm, like, looking back at the film, and I see, like, my mom and my sister, and, like, they're there, and they're, like, trying to be strong for me, and for, like, the rest of the family, which is not filmed. And, you know, I've always had to be strong, like, dealing with my diagnosis. You know, I've had, like, a hard, really hard time, difficult time, like, working through each, like, roadblock that came my way, and, you know, that takes a lot of strength. And to, on top of it, like, finish school and, you know, like, volunteer and, like, everything else, that's a lot. So some people are just like, I don't know how you do it all. Like, I just have to do it, you know. I have to just be positive and get on with it. So I think definitely, like, my stepmom is a role model to me, just, like, in her strength, because she raised us pretty much by herself for at least, like, 10 years, something like that. And just, you know, in terms of women being in film, the film was accepted into First Glance, like, the Philly Festival. And Emily was the only female director who was nominated for Best Director. I thought that was a big deal. I was like, yes, like, finally, you know, getting some recognition here. You know, go Emily. You're strong. You got this. This is all your idea.
Did you guys want to comment on anything else? Anything else you wanted?
Yeah, I'll say that you should all become organ donors. I think everyone should become an organ donor if you're not already. It's so easy. Donate Life and Apple partnered last year to make it as easy as just going to the health app on your iPhone and then going to My Medical ID and then clicking the Donate Life button, and you just, like, fill out a list and you're on the national registry. So only 3 in about 1,000 deaths that happen qualify for organ donation, happen under the circumstances in which organs can be donated. So as many people that can be on that registry as possible should be. Because, like, you know, you could be the difference just by taking a minute to sign up.
Mm-hmm. And you obviously did this not knowing where your relationship would go. It was like there was a person in need and you could fill that need. Mm-hmm. That sounds to me that, you know, that I just want to make sure that message doesn't get lost. Like, you did this completely selflessly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think that if anyone is thinking even a little bit about becoming a living donor, they should definitely call their local transplant center and find out, just, you know, sit down for more information. It's not easy, but it's the easiest way to help a lot.
I just wanted to add that, you know, if you are thinking about it, not only should you go to your transplant center and, you know, get educated on it, but I think it would also really help if there's a group called TRIO, and it's like all throughout the United, oh, it's international actually, of transplant recipients. And just like, if you're thinking about it, just sit in on a meeting and like listen to their stories. And like, I guarantee you, you'll think differently about it once you leave.
Just tell me about the only woman director that she mentioned, because you were too humble to talk about it. What was that?
So we attended the First Glance Film Festival in Philadelphia. And prior to the screenings, they had nominated people for categories. And under Best Feature-Length Director, there was 5 nominees, and 4 of them were men. And then there was me for the director. And we were also the only documentary, which I thought was interesting on a lot of levels. I think for documentaries, it's really hard to kind of get our foothold and to be taken seriously. People have even told us as we've done this, like, that would make a great movie. You should write a script for it. And I'm like, but I have a movie. It's real. It happened. But then for women, it was, I don't know, it was a weird moment to realize that there wasn't other women on the list, you know, to step away from that. And then I started thinking, like, who are the women that I look up to, and realize that, like, a lot of people that we know in the industry are men. And when I worked on sets and worked with people, it was the women directors that I was always paying the most attention to, because it is kind of a hard balance being a woman and also trying to lead a team of people and to bring this to life. And with this documentary, there's a lot of negotiating with the hospital and convincing family members to do this, because you're coming in the most vulnerable time of their life and shoving a camera in their face. And like Lori said, like, we're in the hospital with them, we're in appointments with them, and appointments, you are getting naked and you're showing your doctor, and your medical history is very personal. So there's a lot you have to navigate. So I think we need to like do more to celebrate the women who do that, and we do it largely self-funded. It's really passion projects that we take on, and just, I guess, for every movie you see by a man, see a movie by a woman. Just do your little thing to help, and see movies featuring women, see movies feature women that actually are the role that they're playing. I just think it's important just generally to get more women out there in the forefront. Lori literally woke up from surgery and the first thing she asked is, how is Alana? That's like a testament to what type of person I think you are in the core. Like, when you're not even aware of what you're saying or doing, you know? They both have these moments, like, that just expose who you are as a human. So it's time to write women, and it's time to cast women and to show movies of women who are more complex. We can do a lot of things. We're pretty capable beings, so just do what you can. And if you're a guy and you're wondering how you can do that, give us money for our movies. Volunteer to be on our crew. There's a lot you can do to help us and to support us.
But do you ever feel discrimination?
Yeah, I mean, I started my career not with Gigantic. I've worked for multiple other companies and productions, and then I started with Gigantic, the company that produced this, about 5 years ago. And until then, I was usually the only woman around. My first bosses were directors, and they were all men. I started up the assistant route and the PA route, and then coordinator and all that kind of thing. And it was always men, and I was almost always regaled to the secretarial type roles, taking notes and coordinating meetings and where's my lunch. And I would see guys doing all these like cool things and putting together cameras and learning all this stuff. So I don't even think that they always mean to do it, but yeah, there certainly is there. There's the thought that, like, I'm not strong enough to pick up a camera. I'm not strong enough. I mean, this film was certainly a test, because there were times where, like when Lori is in the hallway and she starts to kind of double over from pain, where part of my instinct was like, drop the camera and help her. But the filmmaker in me is like, don't drop the camera. This is an important, it's an important thing. But like, you can navigate that. You can do that. So I think sometimes the discrimination is just, they don't even realize that it's happening. But yeah, I think it would be a lie to say that women don't feel discriminated against. I can walk into a meeting and pitch this movie, which I've done hundreds of times, and people don't listen. And then I can have a man walk in and pitch it, and it's a totally different reception. I can script it out for them. I've done this where I will go in, I will have a man say exactly the same thing I've said, and it will get a totally different reception. I don't know how to fix it, except be more cognizant of it, but like, it shouldn't matter. it shouldn't matter. You should look at the story and realize, like, this is a great story. These are great people. There's a lot of motivating here. Everyone who has watched it has been touched in some way. There have been a lot of people who've come out, as Alana said, from Trio. We showed it there, and they were really touched. But there's people even today who came that said they are on the waiting list for donations. People are touched by it. People are motivated by it, and they're happy to see their story being told in this really authentic kind of way. So I think you just go out and look for those stories, share those stories.
That was Emily Bunnell, director of the documentary Bean, with Laurie Interlicchio and Alana Duran, after the screening of their film at the Woodstock Film Festival in the fall. Clinics offering transgender health services can be hard to find outside of big cities. In central Illinois, transgender advocates are trying to change that, and they've found an ally in Planned Parenthood. Side Effects Public Media's Cass Harrington reports.
In Peoria, Illinois, for people seeking transgender health services, chances are the first person they'll talk to about their concerns is Dana Garber. Dana Garber is the transgender hormone intake coordinator at the Peoria Planned Parenthood, and today she's wearing a blue dress with sunflowers and a hot pink manicure. Garber began her transition just a few years ago at the age of 55.
How old do I feel? I feel like I'm about 19, but I'm 60. I just turned 60 last week, so.
It's been a year since Planned Parenthood started offering hormone replacement therapy in central Illinois. When Garber transitioned, she had to drive 3 hours to Chicago for her appointments. Now, Garber says, she's seeing her own patients travel from neighboring states.
When you get a surrounding state like Missouri, they have nowhere to go.
It's still rare outside of major cities to find clinics offering these services. But Planned Parenthood has started to fill the gap throughout Illinois and 15 other states. I'm sitting in the living room of Kristen Haley, the co-founder of the Peoria Transgender Society. She's worked to expand healthcare services for trans and gender nonconforming individuals.
There is such a growing need for all services for all age groups, you know, from young children to someone my age and older. So, you know, we have the same healthcare needs as everybody else, plus specific needs for transgender issues.
Last year, her group invited area hospitals and providers to a healthcare summit to tell them about the need. Planned Parenthood was the only one to show up, and it responded. Haley says she hopes the others follow suit.
There is a strong business case that could be made economically, ethically, feasibly, you know, that Central Illinois, as a major medical presence, has the ability to launch into this relatively easily.
She says as many as 500 transgender or gender nonconforming patients from downstate Illinois commute to Chicago for additional care, like surgeries or pediatric services. Part of the problem is many providers don't yet even recognize transgender people's unique medical needs.
There seems to be little interest, you know, in meeting with us or at least talking with us. Is it because there's so many other issues on their plate that this is very minor to them, or is something they don't want to, you know, for other reasons?
That silence may be why Dana Garber, back at Planned Parenthood, feels so passionate about her role. The clinic welcomes transgender patients and treats them with dignity. Garber doesn't want fear to be an obstacle to seeking medical care.
A lot of clients will cancel because they get scared. Like I have had to call some clients before, they might cancel 2 or 3 times.
Garber says in the 50 or so patients she's seen this past year, her clients most fear being judged during that initial appointment.
And I've actually went out there to the waiting room and called patients back, and when they've seen me, they go, "I'm really glad I saw you, because I thought I was not going to be dealing with another trans person." So I think it's comforting to them to be able to come in here and talk to me, because they know I've been through all this.
Younger patients call her, sometimes in tears, just asking for support. They call her the trans mama of Peoria. Garber says compassionate care is what the transgender community needs most. I'm Cass Harrington.
And that story was produced by Side Effects Public Media, a reporting collaborative focused on public health. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1477.